Coming up on Tech News Today, Yahoo launches a browser, Facebook launches an Instagram competitor, but aren't they going to buy Instagram soon? And Jay Leno steals a video from YouTube. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, May 24th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Patrick Norton.
Look at Patrick Norton is here from TechZilla. Welcome, Patrick. How's it going, man?
Good.
Good to have you along for the ride today.
Thank you.
Have you been enjoying Yahoo Access?
I actually installed it on Google Chrome this morning, and I find it strange and slightly wonderful.
Please, everyone at home, make your own World War II and or Jimi Hendrix jokes right now. We'll get those out of the way.
Axis of Evil, make the call.
I was a little disappointed when I saw the headlines last night says Yahoo unveils their own browser, and it turns out it's only a browser on iOS. They have an extension that you can install for Firefox, IE, Safari, or Chrome. It's not nearly as impressive, but the browser, which, I mean, it's just a WebKit-based browser on iPad, is pretty nifty, actually. I like the way it works.
Well,
it looks just like a browser.
What about the way it works do you like the most?
Let's look up Veronica.
Is it an actual browser on iOS, or is it another skinned version of Safari?
It's WebKit, so okay. It's a little less than skinned Safari, but it's not much. So you can see on the left here, it actually shows you trending searches based on what other folks are searching. So if it shows up, nobody's searching for Veronica. But then you click it, and then it has these tiles. Now, this is what I like. It's visual search. That I can just touch and swipe and see more results. And then when I see the thing that I want to go to, I want to go to the Facebook page, I just click it, shows up. And then if I want to see more of those search results from that same thing, I can swipe them up from the bottom.
It's from the top down.
Oh, it's from the top down.
Yeah.
I mean from the top down.
You get that. Well, not that high.
It's hard to do
backwards. The other top.
Yeah. On the bottom is where you have your tab management if you had a bunch of different pages open. So Leo and I did this exact same search. Well, we searched for Leo, but it was a person search, someone who's very visible online. And it was the same thing where all of the title suggestions were about right. Leo's homepage, the Twit TV site, variety of shows that he does. I think it works for certain searches. When you search for a random term, you get a bunch of website sort of thumbnail views that aren't necessarily visual at all and can be hard to decipher.
I did a search for torpedo just now.
So now you see...
But at least I can tell, like, oh, that's the Wikipedia article. That's an Answers.com article. I still like that.
But the third one, I bet you're reading the description to find out what it is.
Dictionary.com.
Yeah, because you've got the description right under the
logo. But yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes it is going to be hard to tell from that. But then you have the description. I think this is better in many cases.
But is it so good that since it can't be your default browser on iOS that you would use it over Safari? So anytime you're in an external program and you decide to open it in a browser, it opens in Safari rather than Yahoo Access.
Well, that's the biggest problem with iOS, right? And Yahoo says we're hoping Apple is going to change that. We've got Apple's blessing on this. We've been working with them. And they sort of implied that Apple really isn't working on Safari much these days. They want to move in and become the new browser.
We just want more people to search through Yahoo, please.
I mean, I think the fact that they introduced the extensions for Firefox, Chrome, and Safari, the idea that you can actually move whatever you're looking at on your iPad over to your main screen, it seems like that was a smart move because you can't make it a default. You might go to the Access browser because you were going, I was searching on my main machine first, and then I'm going to go over here and continue that.
Yeah,
because
it's nice syncing
that
capability.
Weird transfer of like, okay, what was I just searching for here? Now I have to remember what I was doing and find that page again. So it's kind of a neat way that way. I'm kind of curious if Yahoo is going to move towards a more visual look for its own search results in general. Because I know Google's got the thumbnails you can see when you're hovering over them. But this looks like it's almost like if you don't want to be really searching, you're going to write Facebook or something, and you go, oh, that's Facebook, I'll click it. Because a lot of people just search instead of actually using URLs.
Now, the extension on Chrome, and it works very similar on the other browsers, puts a little dock down at the bottom left that that shows up on all pages, which can be kind of annoying, but frankly, I didn't even notice it once I installed it. And if you can, if you've got my screen, Jason, you can see this. It looks similar to what you get on the tablet, and you can slide through all of these little thumbnails and everything. And then once you find what it is you want to go to, you just click on it, and it shows up. Now, I've got the same search in a Google search there. Now, I say I click on it and it shows up, but this website isn't loading. Okay, there we go. And then you also get these little arrows on the left and right, which aren't showing up right now. But supposedly, those allow you to go backwards and forwards through the search results that you had.
If you do the search on Tim Cook, then it should allow you to arrow back and forth.
I think it's because of this that your system is just bogged down.
Actually, it's probably because I'm installing Ubuntu in a virtual machine.
That might have something to do with it. And the fact that your fan sounds like it's about to leap out of the MacBook.
I can't even hear it. Ayaz was saying that, too.
Yeah, it's loud.
So
I thought it was monstrously loud. He doesn't hear it. So
last thing to understand is that writer and hacker Nick Kubrilovic found the source file for the Chrome extension, looked into it, and lo and behold, there was the private key Yahoo uses.
Oopsie.
To validate the extension. What that means is that anybody could then validate themselves as Yahoo. So they could create an extension, spoof the DNS. You would think you're updating your Yahoo Access extension. Chrome would look at the key and say, oh, yep, they got the private key. It's all valid. And then, boom, you'd have some piece of spyware in your machine. So I wouldn't install this until that has been resolved. And Yahoo says they're resolving it.
This just seems like every once in a while someone will, it's not just Yahoo, but someone will come out with an alternative browser that's really going to change the way we browse. Rockmelt comes to mind, or Flock was one of those browsers back in the day that it was like, you know, they just couldn't make Flock happen as much as they tried. And I don't want to say that this isn't a good idea. I just feel like people's habits are very ingrained. And until I have a browser that makes sense that I can use seamlessly on one of my iDevices, I don't see it being worth it.
Yeah. I won't use it on mobile device because it can't be a default browser, even though I love it on the mobile. I won't use it. I'm going to uninstall this extension, not just because it's insecure, but also because it's just kind of annoying and I don't need it on my browser. So they need to do something more, like the fact that they sync your last tab is nifty, but I want it to sync all the tabs. If it did that, that might make it worth me using in a lot more places and making sure I used it.
And that only happens, by the way, if you log in with your Yahoo account or whatever other connection.
Let's talk about this story over at Fortune. Adam Leshinsky, he's the guy who wrote Inside Apple, has a report on Fortune about Tim Cook's first 9 months as CEO and some of the ways things have changed. That was the big question when he took over. How's it going to be without Steve Jobs in charge? How is Apple going to change? Obviously, things are going well for Apple. In his first three quarters as CEO, Apple's stock is up 42% from an already strong position when he took over. And now Leshinsky compares that to Steve Jobs' first three quarters back in the 90s when he came back. The stock from Apple only went up 21% in the first three quarters. Very different landscape for Apple back then, though. I mean, they were almost out of business when Steve Jobs took them over.
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve Jobs walked into an accident site with something that was dead on the table and brought it back to life. Not to take anything away from Tim Cook, because the article is interesting because it says Tim Cook came in, he's being nice to investors, he's being nice to employees, he's doing all of the stuff that Steve Jobs didn't care about. Which is basically, you know, getting people to behave and doing a lot of, you know, corporate stuff, which may not be the Steve Jobs way, but there's only one Steve Jobs. He's gone. How do we move past that? And it's a really interesting article.
They kind of paint the picture of him being more corporate, more conservative. One former VP, Max Paley, who left Apple in 2011, but worked there for 14 years, said, "I've been told that any meeting of significance is now always populated by project management and global supply management. When I was there, engineering decided what we wanted, and it was the job of product management and supply management to go get it. Steve Jobs was an engineer. That's the way it worked then. Does this mean the project managers and the business guys and the supply chain guys are in charge because Tim Cook's there?"
Well, it might just mean that everyone's in the loop a lot earlier on in any process rather than Steve Jobs saying, "We've decided what we want. Do it. I don't want your input." That's what I'm telling you to do.
I mean, there's stories where they're like, they changed the case. I want to say, I can't remember if it's the iPad or the iPad 2. They changed the case design like 3 weeks before it was supposed to ship. And suddenly it was people racing to China, Foxconn pulling 2,000 people out of dormitories at midnight to start rebuilding the kind of entire construction, you know, line, whatever you call the assembly line for that. And I can see where a lot of people would be like, yeah, it'd be nice to have somebody moving a little slower, thinking a little farther out, thinking of the other people other than just make, this is the perfect product. And but the flip side is everybody wants the perfect product. And Steve's gone. So
Speaking of China, Tim Cook went to China. A very public affair. I'm going to go. I'm going to tour a facility, something that Steve Jobs didn't do. And there's rumors of him being more visible like that even on the Apple campus, having lunch with people that aren't his...
Not necessarily
people that aren't
Chinese
Johnny
food,
Ive.
But...
No, just any old food that they have on the Apple campus is probably good food.
Steve Jobs always ate with Jonathan Ive. Who eats with Johnny Ive now? If Tim Cook's eating with all these other random people.
Is it Sir Jonathan Ive now?
What is Sir Johnny Ive now?
He can just command people. That's part of his knighthood. I'm pretty sure. You sit with me now. Sword. Or he can design a perfect person with him. But yeah, I mean...
Sup with me.
Cook was a supply chain guy, so I'm pretty sure I could imagine when the design would change and he'd be like, oh, great, now I got to make all this work. Maybe he has that going on. Also, people aren't afraid of Tim Cook as they were with Steve Jobs, where he'd end up... There's all those famous stories of people being fired in elevators, and you'd be terrified if you were in the same elevator as Steve Jobs, because... You don't know how long you're going to be there. You don't know if he's going to yell at you.
But Tim Cook, fire you.
Or fire you. So the thing, Tim Cook being approachable or approaching other people, it just seems like, okay, let's be a little bit, let's relax a little bit. We know there's a big change going on. We have to figure out how are we going to be. And Tim Cook obviously had to be a level-headed guy to work with Steve Jobs as well as he did. Because nobody survives like that, like Tim Cook did.
My thoughts in reading this Fortune article was, we have gone from the mad but brilliant reign of the king to the good king, the friendly king. But that doesn't mean it's a bad reign, necessarily. It's definitely a monarchy there, though. This is Tim Cook is running the show, and I think that's one of the things that comes through in Leshinsky's article as well.
Yeah.
On to some IDC numbers, and Apple running away from the pack, but not as fast as Android is as far as market share dominance.
Yeah, this is IDC Worldwide Mobile Phone Tracker data that's comparing quarter one of last year to quarter one of this year, 2012. Android and iOS hold together 82% of the smartphone market. Android's at 59%, so a majority. iOS at 23%. Obviously, apples and oranges a little bit, where iOS has one product line and Android has... quite a few, but Android, hey, look at you. Big losers since the last quarter, well, the quarter one of 2011, this time last year. Symbian dropped from 26% to 6.8%.
Ow.
That's a big drop. BlackBerry OS dropped from 13.6% to 6.4%. Those were the two biggest losers, and not in a good way, not like a TV show. Linux market share fell a tiny bit to 2.3%. Windows... Which IDC bundles as Phone 7 and others, can't even get above 3%. In fact, they went down a tiny bit.
They're
still
share.
In the twos.
Now, shipping numbers for Linux and Windows went up, but they didn't go up enough. They still lost market share. So,
right.
Linux, if you're wondering, is non-Android Linux. and so that number is usually just kind of bobbing along. It never gets a lot of traction, but it never falls very far either. Windows, on the other hand, Microsoft's making a big push. And IDC is saying, we're not going to evaluate that yet.
Yeah, IDC is, they know that people are going to look at this and say, Windows Phone, DOA, or you know, the new OS. IDC says, Windows Mobile, Windows Phone, has yet to make a significant inroads in the worldwide smartphone market, but 2012 should be considered the ramp-up year for Nokia and Microsoft to boost volumes. But until Nokia speeds the cadence of its smartphone releases, or more vendors launch their own Windows Phone-powered smartphones, IDC anticipates slow growth for the OS. Basically, somebody besides Nokia has to step up and have some winners with Windows Phone, or this isn't going to go well. I mean, the market share is minuscule.
Yeah, I mean, the other part would be Windows Mobile, right? Like, that's the thing that makes people shudder. You don't even want to think about Windows Mobile anymore. But Windows Phone, I still think Microsoft's going to probably pull out, I think I said 15% last year. That was my prediction. 15% this year. And once they release Windows 8, I keep saying this over and over again, because this is where I fully expect everything to kind of come together. When they release Windows 8 and all this experience becomes very similar to my tablets, like my phone, like my computer, oh, I kind of get this. that's one of the things that Apple got away with. They taught everybody how to use a smartphone. They're like, here's how this is supposed to look. These are the functions. This is limited for now. There's going to be a long tap. Android put in a long tap. Everybody did these kinds of small learning things. And now Microsoft has this very different looking UI that at first glance doesn't seem like the rest of them. So some people go, I don't want to learn that. But if they are learning it for their desktops, for their tablets, they might be willing to go to the phone. But that's a long ways away.
It's funny, I've actually stumbled across while I was looking at this, an article on Forbes where it says Microsoft claims it's already passed Apple in China in terms of units sold, that where their Apple's already, or excuse me, Windows Phone is already 7% of the smartphone market. Apple's iPhone is at 6% of the market. And it's one thing to think about with Nokia is because they're so, like, they could never figure out, they could never get it to work in the United States. So I'm curious to see if they'll end up with a worldwide success for Windows Phone and how long it'll take before there are enough vendors online or enough of the carriers online, like Sarah mentioned, for Windows Phone to actually break in the United States.
I don't think they'll win Europe either, though. Europeans are even less interested in Windows Phone than right. we are right now.
But most of the world doesn't live in the United States or Europe.
That's what I was about to say. If they could win China, then that's their stepping stone to conquer the rest of the world. And they absolutely have a shot at that. I'm not saying they will,
right.
But you know, Apple is having a hard time getting on the dominant carriers there, and if Windows can through Nokia, that's a big advantage.
That's right, because I think that report is Windows Phone has 7%. I think it's Android still at almost 70%. So I think there's a long way to chip at.
Yeah, there's a huge market opportunity. That's what that means.
Nice spin.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Two new vehicles we're talking about a lot are, of course, the Ford Focus Electric. That's the 2012 Ford Focus Electric that you can go and pre-order right now at your Ford dealer. And the 2013 C-Max Energy plug-in hybrid coming next year is worth keeping an eye on as well. Both of them make use of all of the great Ford electrical technology, regenerative braking, sending energy to the battery pack for later use so you get the most efficient engine. Includes unique sync with My Ford Touch EV features to help you maximize your range. Lots of driver information systems. If you're into tech in the cabin, you want to go take a look at this. Unique execution of sync with My Ford Touch lets you optimize your electrified driving, find out your range, find out your fuel level, your battery power level, your average instant miles per gallon equivalency, all of that on your smartphone app as well. So you got to go take a look at this. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is an all-electric vehicle without a gasoline engine. It's all electric. Fully charges in 3 to 4 hours, 100% electric, zero CO2 emissions, and has a lithium-ion battery in there with new technology that lets you top it off without reducing the lifespan of the battery. So if you're at 70% charge, you're not worried about, well, should I discharge it all the way? Don't even think about that. You just top it off now. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available for reservations right now, and the 2013 Ford C-Max Energy plug-in hybrid is coming fall 2013. Specifications are always subject to change with production vehicles, but you can keep up on the latest at Ford's website and learn more about the electric technologies Ford is bringing to vehicles at ford.com/technology. Now, Facebook is taking on Instagram.
Sort of. That's true. Facebook introduced a new free iOS app today called Facebook Camera. Guess what it does? Now, obviously, immediately people are going to compare this to Instagram that Facebook announced they were purchasing back in April. Facebook bought that for $1 billion. But don't forget that deal hasn't closed and the FTC is probing that transaction. Now, Dirk Stoop, the Facebook Photos product manager, talked to All Things D and says Instagram and that team had nothing to do with the Facebook Camera app. And when the Instagram acquisition was announced, Mark Zuckerberg made it very clear that Instagram is going to remain independent. So that's why this app exists.
So this makes perfect sense to me, right?
It does?
Yeah.
What?
In other words, Facebook says, well, it makes perfect sense when you start at, we're going to buy Instagram, but they will stay separate. They will stay independent. They will stay
Instagram.
Because
we've already been working on this Facebook Camera app internally.
So we got this Facebook Camera app. We're going to go ahead and put it out. And then when the Instagram folks join us, once that's approved, we'll take them and have them help us improve the Facebook Camera app, but they'll still make Instagram.
But why does Facebook benefit from having their own internal app that is an Instagram competitor and then keeping Instagram independent?
Well,
they'll just start running ads?
The question is, why keep Instagram independent?
Yeah.
But I get why they're going ahead and releasing a camera app, because they're like, well, it's just going to get better.
Well, especially since it's like this Instagram thing doesn't seem like it's a done deal. it's pushed off to sometime this year. They want a camera app now.
Yeah.
It's convenient that they've already got something in-house.
But that is the question is, why keep Instagram independent? And maybe that's a goodwill gesture. Maybe that's one of the ways they got Instagram to sell, is like, we'll let you keep making a separate app. That's very narrow. Remember, Instagram doesn't do a whole lot. It doesn't have a website.
Right. And think of all the people who heard the news that Facebook bought Instagram. Instagram users who went, oh, great. The party's almost over. They're going to ruin it. So if Facebook's smart, they don't actually ruin it. If they can figure out a way to monetize it without even incorporating it into Facebook, I think it'll keep a lot of people happy.
I have location services turned off in this app.
Yeah.
And it just said,
a lot harder to stop.
We can't access your camera roll unless you turn on location services.
Because it wants to, like, if you share a picture on the app, it wants to tell your Facebook friends where you were when you took it. Because all that information is attached to those photos.
But it's my camera roll. I should still be able to access it.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, turn off data, like geo. Is it because you're locked out of accessing the camera?
It's because I've
roll?
Turned off. I'm like, no, this app cannot access my location. I don't want it to know
but
where
you,
I am.
But you let your onboard camera access your location. I'm saying it might be a security issue inside of iOS. Where
camera needs location services enabled in order to access your camera roll.
And as soon as you take a picture.
That's stupid. No other app has this restriction.
I think it's Facebook wanting to have information about where you are.
I'm just trying to figure out why they would keep both at this point. The location services thing aside, I'm thinking, is it possible that Facebook could do something like what car manufacturers do, soda companies do? We just have two brands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're on Instagram, and this is a very close thing. We're cool with that.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Regular and extra strength.
And we have Facebook because why do we have the separate app? Because we can. And the thing is, it does have some of the similar functionalities. It has the filters. So if you're an Instagram user, you go, oh, I could use this too. It's got similar things. They're not going to win people like right away from their own competition right there.
And now the upload's failing. But this thing's a piece of crap.
But the other thing is they don't have iOS integration, right? Like Twitter's in there. You can go to the camera app right away and tweet that image out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that with Instagram. You can't do it with Facebook. But with this Facebook camera app, at least it's like one step closer to this. I quickly took a photo and I want to get to Facebook versus that horrible runaround you have to do now. If you take a photo on your iPhone, you have to go to the Facebook app, I think, to upload it. Or you can send it, I guess, via an email address. But it's not exactly an elegant solution.
Facebook has experimented with this before. They have bought companies where Facebook Messenger is just really a rebranded Beluga, which was a company that they bought and spun it out as a separate app. If you don't want to be in the whole Facebook experience, you just want to message Tom or Ayaz because you know they're probably going to be online and you can use Facebook chat. That's what that is. So that works for them. I think probably what was going on is they wanted to launch an Instagram competitor. They probably got far enough along because, of course, these apps don't get built overnight. Maybe Mark Zuckerberg said to himself, you know, this is kind of like Facebook Places killing Foursquare. It's not going to happen. I know it. I want to buy Instagram. But everyone has worked on this app that's not terrible. And now let's just put it out because Instagram isn't legally ours yet. That's my non-insidery
That makes some
idea.
Sense. That makes some sense. I think they're willing to have two brands out there. I think that's true. Also in the mobile space, Google has now added in-app subscription billing to the Android App Store. Google Play Store, I guess we should call it these days. This is good for game developers, for magazine publishers. Anybody wants to have a recurring subscription that will auto-renew monthly or annually. And developers set the price at your normal 30-70 split. Google takes 30%. The developer keeps 70%. But the nifty thing is that, A, they don't have the same restriction Apple has that says, well, if you offer an in-app subscription, you can't offer any kind of other subscription anywhere else in the app. And also, Google is actually giving you an API that handles validation and cancellation of subscriptions that you can extend to your website. So quite the opposite. Instead of keeping you in the app like Apple tries to do, Google's saying, hey, you want to take the subscribers you got through your app in the Google Play Store and validate them on your website for other offerings? Have at it. We'll let you use our servers.
That might be because the newsstand in iOS is just such a piece of stuff.
Yes, it is. It is the brown stuff.
Yes, it is the single most frustrating experience I've had on any Apple application in the last few years.
No, I've got something worse.
It's not a competition.
Oh.
Messages is worse.
Yeah, that was pretty much gone before I got a chance to kick off with it. But you're right.
We are straying from the point, which is in-app subscriptions for Google. Now, they're pretty much up to par with the iOS App Store. And I would venture
with
to
less
say...
suck.
If they've got this huge market share we were just talking about a couple of stories ago, and you're a magazine publisher that's like, you know what, I don't want to have to mess with like what the Financial Times did, where they made their entire app HTML5, or I have to strip out anything that takes you to my website, I'm just going to go Android with my publication.
And then they just have to worry about making sure their application runs on the 32 different versions of Android across the umpteen different carriers.
That's
the fact
the
that they don't have a unitized operating
there
system
you go.
Update.
See?
So they're going to have to staff up
it's
the developer department anyway.
Because of that, that's true. But Google's setting up, they're obviously setting up that whole thing where it's with November is the rumor, that their Nexus line of tablets and phones and their store, the Play Store, will have all the stuff. It seems like Google's setting up everything that, okay, finally, when you get your tablet from us, you can have applications and magazines again without this bizarre, like, oh, is it going to work? Is the resolution going to be broken? Google's going to be able to say, it will totally work because we have
it will totally work for everyone who buys one between November and Christmas, but all you people who bought before now, I'm really sorry, but you're going to have to deal with whatever you have.
Deal with it.
Sorry, I'm just like...
That's at the bottom of the EULA right there.
No, but it's so funny because like Google's like so desperate. They're like, we are killing the phones. We have to kill with the, you know, the tablets. And then, you know, you pick up a tablet, it's like the Sony tablet. It's like, oh... Wow, this is like such an 80s design. That's so nice. And, you know, it's just a weird fragmented market right now. It's messy.
It's retro. Well, you know, it is very similar to Windows versus Mac, Android versus iOS. You've got the monolith that is consistent, and then you have the wide open Wild West that's, you know, the trade-off is it's...
Except it's not wide open. If it was wide open, like, anybody could update to any appropriate version of Android for their phone, and instead it's locked down by the carriers.
It's oddly less open than Microsoft when you put it that way.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a weird way of looking at things. Finally, our last story before we get to the news views. Brian Kammerer has a hilarious open letter to Jay Leno on Splitsider.com about the fact that one of his videos has been taken down from YouTube by NBC. But it is a lovely demonstration of why the automatic robot takedown notice system is broken. In 2007, Kammerer's friend Travis Irvine, who is a comedian, ran for mayor of Bexley, Ohio. They shot a music video with original music, so they weren't using any copyrighted music. They made the music themselves. And it's a funny black and white film of Travis Irvine acting patriotic and walking through the streets of Bexley, Ohio. It got picked up 2 years later, in 2009, by The Tonight Show, and was used in a bit about local campaign commercials. They never contacted Travis Irvine or anyone to get permission to run it, but they didn't care. They were like, oh, yeah, we made this for people to see. They used it. It was funny. It was on The Tonight Show. That's great. You know, now we can say we've been on The Tonight Show in a way. That's awesome. However, recently, Kammerer, who directed the video, found that it had been removed from YouTube and blocked at the request of NBC Universal. Kammerer, if you read all the way through his post, clearly understands how the robot works and knows that this is, you know, this is the way the automatic robot works. In other words, The Tonight Show has uploaded the signature for the episode that they used his commercial in, and that robot is now looking at that signature and saying, oh, well, this video and that video match, so we're going to take down that video. All he has to do is file a counter notice, right, and wait 24 hours, and it should get restored, and hopefully NBC Universal isn't stupid enough to go in and re-put the block on it. But Kammerer isn't settling for that. He's blaming Jay Leno directly. He says, you know, I know all about this robot stuff, but this is your show, and you did it, and you took my thing, and you're responsible. You're calling me a thief. He's trying to bust through all of these excuses on YouTube and say, you know what? People need to take responsibility for what they're doing with content. What do you guys think? You look stunned.
I was reading this before, and it's like, Jay, please apologize for using our video without asking and then getting our video blocked and publicly calling me and my Travis friends thieves. I'm sure you would like to talk this through with us on your television show, but I'd rather meet somewhere some more objective. My first choice would be to discuss this with you on the People's Court. I'd hope arbitration would not be necessary, but I fear we are opening that door. I mean, you know, he's looking for a meme. He's looking to be famous. He's looking to basically call out Jay Leno. But, you know, given Jay Leno's... How do you describe it? You know,
negative Q.
Yeah, at this point, right? You know, it's obvious that Leno doesn't really care about anybody other than Leno. So why would Leno acknowledge that him or NBC screwed an innocent person over?
Well, that's the neat thing about the way that social news spreads these days. This guy gets enough attention, then they'll be forced to respond,
like
even
they
if they
with...
really, really don't care and don't want to.
Well, even if Leno doesn't respond, I mean, it should draw some attention to the fact that this kind of silly behavior happens. I know this happened to me with, I used a Final Cut loop in something I was using, and it got taken down because somebody else had taken that loop and actually they sell a song based on it. It was like, I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. You can do that, and I can do that. They have a copyright, and I have a copyright because we have a license to this. It's just so silly sometimes where you have to go through this process. And if this can get enough attention to people to go, hey, look, YouTube, this robots thing, this is kind of stupid sometimes. Maybe we can work on this a little differently. And if you're going to bring up Jay Leno, not exactly very for the internet crowd, most of those guys are like social media people, usually on Conan O'Brien's side. Right. And they will be able to go, they'll see Leno's name up there, and they're going to click. That's what I did this morning. I was like, what's going on with Leno? Like, I'm clicking this, and I'm reading.
What weaselly thing did Leno do this time?
Yeah, I was like, what? Like, he screwed over somebody. There's a shock, so I click this.
Do you think this guy undermines his own cause by making such a joking attack on Jay Leno personally, and it makes people think, ah, you're just a weasel looking for attention?
Yeah, it probably wasn't Jay at all. He doesn't even know how this all works.
Right, and he acknowledges that in this Splitsider column, but I think a lot of people may be turned off by that aspect. I think Kammerer has an excellent point, which
yeah,
is
he does.
We can all point at everybody else and go, well, it's the DMCA's fault. I'm YouTube. I'm saying it's the DMCA's fault. They make us do that. And Viacom's the one that sued us. And Tonight Show can say, hey, you know, we just upload the signatures. We can't be responsible for policing everything and making sure everything's
even
there.
Though
any
we
more
paid...
than ISPs can be responsible for policing everything.
Wait, is this the same people who can't be responsible but paid a whole bunch of lobbyists a whole bunch of money to get legislation put in place so that they could be responsible but not have to actually pay attention?
Well, and I think the other key point here is the reason this video is in the Tonight Show is that the Tonight Show felt like they could get away with playing it as fair use. If anything, this guy, Kammerer, and Travis Irvine should be sending a takedown notice to the Tonight Show for using their copyrighted material in that episode of the Tonight Show.
When you
everywhere it's posted.
Lawyers.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. That would have been much more fun for me. It's like I've engaged a lawyer to basically sue Leno for taking down my video.
Yeah.
That would have been even more obnoxious.
Anyway, I thought it was it's certainly this guy is not the first person to go through this. It's we've at Tech News Today, we've suffered a spurious takedown notice. Was it from NBC Universal?
It was Universal Music, I think.
It was Universal. I knew there was a Universal in it. And so, you know, this happens a lot, but it just goes to show how broken the system is. Let's move on to the news fuse.
That's broken. Thing.
In fact, there's good news, everyone.
Hey.
The SpaceX Dragon cargo ship flew by the International Space Station today, where it passed a series of tests to make sure crucial systems like navigation and flight control worked properly. And if everything goes well, the Dragon will fly within 30 feet of the International Space Station on Friday for final tests.
Woohoo! A German court has ruled that Motorola Mobility infringes a Microsoft patent that covers the sending and receiving of long SMS messages. Yep, Microsoft owns that patent, apparently. Motorola must get a license for the patent, stop using the patented feature, or stop selling the products that use the feature in Germany. Motorola recently won an injunction in Germany against the Xbox 360 and Windows PCs, as well as an ITC recommendation against Xbox 360s in the U.S. So it's time for us to get our rulers out and measure the stack of patents.
Who's got
because
the biggest
stack? Because I think they're pretty high.
I think it's going to have a nice cross-licensing agreement. We'll see that soon. Oh, yeah, Facebook, you got your new fancy app. Well, Google's going to show you up with a new app. Well, not really. It's an updated version of Google Plus, though, and it's for Android. The update brings a very visual look to Google Plus and makes it look a lot more like the iOS app that got updated. Want more? Well, they even made it easier to have Hangouts, so knock yourself out.
Do you want to take this French name on, Sarah? It's the... Commission Nationale de l'Informatique.
De
Liberté.
Yeah. I'm not really much better than you are. That was a good joint effort.
They're questioning Google over its privacy policy changes to see if it harms consumers. Google's previous attempts to answer the commission were found to be, quote, incomplete or approximate. Google has until July 8th to provide better answers.
I like how the commission was like, you know, maybe something was lost in translation, but for whatever reason, you're not answering our questions.
We tried hitting Google Translate and it didn't help.
Yeah, just you seem to be avoiding the answer completely.
How do I say I do not recall in French?
Je ne
remember.
Recall pas. Blizzard announced that the Diablo 3 Real Money Auction House is delayed. It was originally planned for May 22nd. Then it was delayed to the 29th. Now, Blizzard hasn't given a new time frame for when the Real Money Auction House will launch. However, an update to the game fixes some bugs related to the Monk class to make it less powerful.
They're only bugs if you're not playing Monk. Otherwise, you're nerfed!
AT&T has cleared the NVIDIA Icera 410 LTE modem for use on its network. This is a multi-mode modem, which means it works with LTE, HSPA+, 3G, and 2G networks. You'll first find this in tablets and clamshell devices, and it's capable of reaching speeds of 50 megabits per second.
Ooh.
Slobber. Remember that cool DVR feature that Dish introduced where it would automatically skip commercials in its prime time recording? Well, Fox finally got around to suing Dish. In their statement, it says, "We were given no choice but to file suit." I think they had a choice, but okay. I get what they're saying. They based the claim on a violation of copyrights and breach of contract. They described the auto hop feature, as it's called, as destroying, quote, "the fundamental underpinnings of the broadcast television ecosystem." Wow, that's evil. How could you do that, Dish?
So, programmers, listen up. I know you're listening. Your free ride creating Windows desktop programs is coming to a close. To further their goal of getting you to write Metro apps in Windows 8, Microsoft has decided that Visual Studio 11 Express, which is the free-to-use version of its integrated desktop environment, can produce nothing else. If you want to make desktop software, you'll need either Visual C++ 2010 Express and Visual C Sharp 2010 Express products, or pay about $400 to $500 for Visual Studio 11 Professional. In any case, you have to pay.
They really want you to make Metro apps.
Sharp may soon have a hand in screens for upcoming Apple products, whatever they may be. Reuters reports Japan's Sharp Corp will assist Hanhai Precision Industry Company, that's the Foxconn folks, in building a plant in China that will produce panels for Apple's iPhone and other consumer electronics products, the Nikkei Business Daily said on Thursday. Hanhai owns part of another Sharp plant and 11% of Sharp as a company.
Let's check the randomizer.
Randomizer.
What do you think of this platform for the presidential election 2012? One barcode per baby.
I'm for it.
No baby left unbarcoded. That's kind of what Elizabeth Moon was saying in a BBC series called 60 Second Ideas. She made the case, she's a science fiction author, for putting a barcode on every person at birth. Here's the quote. "If I were Empress of the Universe, I would insist on every individual having a unique ID permanently attached, a barcode, if you will, an implanted chip to provide an easy, fast, inexpensive way to identify individuals."
Eek.
I chip my dogs. I chip my kid. I don't see the problem with this.
Would you chip yourself?
Sure. Yeah. That way, I would love to get through like airport security faster that way. It's like, just check me. Right there. I'm completely fine. I'm the same guy all the time.
What if you did something bad and you were on the run? You wouldn't want everyone to find you.
Well, then this will
be... What if you were accused of doing something bad that you didn't do?
That could happen anyway.
And you were fleeing the country anyway.
Let's say for some reason that I'm not going to explain why I'm fleeing the country. No. That could happen anyway with a chip or not or passport or not.
Yeah, but right? It's going to be a lot harder for you to prove your innocence when they can tell who you are and then throw you in jail.
So I can't fake this or spoof this. I can't erase it.
There's the problem. We have a whole other problem. It can be faked. It can be spoofed. You might not even be you. So this doesn't actually solve anything.
I'm not me.
You might have someone else's eyes in your face.
This could be a real
problem.
They
made a movie out of that.
Yeah. Minority Report.
And you could easily like dig the chip out of Patrick's neck. Well, probably not easily, but...
I'd like to think I would either be dead or fighting.
Yeah, I think he'd be fighting you off. But, I mean, you could easily take a chip out of someone and then put it in yourself, and now you're them.
I guess you can go to this horrific kind of idea. I guess for me, I'm thinking, okay, if my kid leaves the house... and somebody finds him, I'd like to be somebody. He can't communicate. It'd be nice to go, okay, let's scan him.
The problem is none of these chips at this point with the technology we have are detectable in a way that's useful. It's like one of my favorites. Somebody came up to me and they're like, "We have cellular tracking for your child. Your child can never get lost." I'm like, I can walk into a mall and have this fail because the GPS stops. I'm like, but as long as your child stays outside in range of cell phones, it'll work. I'm
as your child plays in the street, it'll be fine.
And you can't take it off your child. I'm like, really? Do you have children? I mean, you know, have you seen what they will do to take things off of their body?
Narrowed it down to he's either in a tunnel or he's in a parking
garage. Also, you know, a barcode on your toddler makes sense, but that toddler will grow up. Right. And then it's an issue.
So it needs to expire.
When they rob a bank.
Well, that's why the chip, I think, is a much better idea than the tattoo. You're right. That's a good point.
Dad!
You're not scanning. Yeah, he's 17.
At some level, it's creepy, the idea that, you know, if the government could basically just start tracking you everywhere you go. We'd like to know where you've been, Thomas.
Yeah.
I don't even know where.
If you don't have anything to hide, what's the problem?
Everybody's checking
I
in.
Love that.
And that's exactly how fascism got up to speed so quickly.
Everybody's checking in on Foursquare anyway. They're telling everyone. Where
not
they
me,
are.
Baby.
Yeah. Except for Patrick.
Nobody knows where you are right now.
Well, that's
well,
a different
problem.
Well,
I do problem. Know how we can find out what will happen in the future.
I am a fortune teller, so let me tell you. Actually, I have no idea how this one's going to shake out. Europe's highest court, second highest court, is going to rule on a $1.1 billion Microsoft fine on June 27th. At issue is whether EU regulators were justified in fining Microsoft 899 million euros, which comes out to about 1.1 billion U.S. dollars, 4 years ago for failing to comply with an antitrust ruling that was supposed to make the playing field more even for its rivals. Microsoft lawyers have been arguing, they argued most recently last year in court that the fine was excessive and undeserved. So this is a long time coming. Cubify 3D is going to start shipping tomorrow. You're going to be able to print objects up to 5.5 inches by 5.5 inches. Yeah, so a cubic 5.5 inch thing. So like building blocks for your kid.
I can put barcodes on.
Yeah, made of gold.
I'm okay with barcoding blocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's this block been?
There,
the block activists
will get
civil rights for blocks.
The first waterproof Sony Handycam is coming to Japan tomorrow, May 25th. How waterproof is it? We'll find out soon enough. And finally, Geek Pride Day is tomorrow, everybody.
Yay!
Yeah. It's finally the day of the year where being a geek is cool. Just kidding.
Celebrate.
The geek is always cool.
You can celebrate by buying a copy of WYSIWYG by Ed Piskor, now in hardback.
Looks like an old Mac, but it's really a book.
It's a compilation of all of his WYSIWYG comics, which are based on the lives of Kevin Poulsen and Mitnick and Wozniak and Captain Crunch. It's good stuff. Anyway, Geek Pride Day tomorrow. Mm. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Why, it's a message from Jose in Jacksonville. About Google and Motorola. What's your theory, Jose? Let's hear it.
Hey, guys. Jose from Jacksonville here. Love the show. Hey, one thing that nobody has thought of, I think, is that the reason for Google to keep Motorola is that they have a manufacturing arm, and Google's trying to make the Google Doggle. The actual Google, not the application, but nevertheless. The deals are in place with manufacturing companies. That would be a real easy, we're no longer going to be making mobile phones, but... Hey, look, we built all these glasses that everybody wants to buy. Love the show.
I don't think they get Motorola to stop making mobile phones, but it is an intriguing idea to say, oh, we've got Motorola to make our Google glasses now. Nobody's going to get upset about that.
The idea would be to stop making mobile phones so they wouldn't be competing with their hardware partners. That'd be the,
but
gimmick.
That's not
sounds
happen.
A little crazy. It's not like they probably would sell that business off.
I don't think it's an either-or situation, but I like what Jose's saying about getting Motorola to make the Google glasses for you.
And the tablets.
Well, they're already making tablets. They're going to make all kinds of tablets.
But tablets that a bunch of people buy this time.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry, was that harsh?
But that doesn't... I'm trying to think, is there any reason Motorola wouldn't be the best choice to make Google Glasses? I mean, they don't make glasses. So you might want somebody who's, I don't know, a sunglass manufacturer or something.
So Google's going to buy Oakley?
Oakley is going to...
They're going to know. It's going to be really easy for
them. But Motorola could design parts of it. Anyway, the point Jose's making that is good is Motorola is a hardware manufacturer, and Google didn't have that before, and they've got this hardware, Google Glasses, that maybe the two can meet up somehow.
Yeah, it's a Google product. It's not like there are all other manufacturers that Google's supposed to play nice with. Like, we don't want to have our own proprietary glasses because you guys are going to get upset. I mean, this is a Google thing.
Yeah.
Even though other companies, at least what we've heard, are also working on this technology.
Like Oakley, I think, actually is worth.
Yeah.
I think they're involved in something like that.
Oakley does a lot of strange things.
Yeah, the MP3, the thumper.
The thumps.
Oakley thumps. All right, that's it for this show. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. And thanks for submitting stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Almost 7,000 people in there. That's how we found out about that Jay Leno story. Get in there, submit your story, vote it up or down. It's one of the ways we decide what goes in the lineup each and every day. Patrick Norton, thank you, sir, for joining us. Always good to have you.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
What's up Techzilla land these days?
Techzilla land. Oh, my goodness. We did a show yesterday. We were talking actually about Comcast cap, whether they lifted it or whether it's going to be much worse for people who consume video. We've got reviews of the new Viera VT50 coming, which is supposed to be the HD TV of 2012 to buy if you're in a
Panasonic makes good TVs.
Yes, and we talk about reviving your cell phone battery. Cell phone battery, you think it's on its way out, we got something for you to do before you buy a new battery.
It doesn't involve paddles, right?
No, okay, not this time.
That sounds awesome. TEKZILLA.com.
Yes, sir.
Techzilla.com. Patrick and Veronica and Roger and used to be Serafina.
She's still there for a few more weeks.
Just a few more weeks.
Just a few more weeks.
Check it out. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or you can give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. We're live at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv each and every afternoon. You can join us then if you want to as well. Darren Kitchen joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.